Welcome, everyone. We're reminding folks that this is a new track we're doing this year is for end user track, and we'd love to ask for your help in encouraging more true end users, since a lot of us deal with many challenges, and the end user, those that are actually using the products, once we've gone through and got things certified, I think are a key part of the whole ecosystem, key part of this whole process. So as a group, I implore you to reach out and do some encouragement for next year. But let's go on. Again, as our next session with Ashit Vora, going to look into FIPS is FIPS, real world is real world, and never the twain shall meet. So a little bit on Ashit. I think many of you know, but he's a co-founder and laboratory director at Acumen Security, done a considerable amount of work, came from Cisco Systems, heading up the certification process there. And as I always like to say, fresh off the plane from Mumbai, please welcome Ashit.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Fresh off the plane, I guess, about 14 years back. But it's interesting you mentioned that. So the title is a riff of Rudyard Kipling, who used to be my grandfather's favorite poet. My grandfather used to love to say, East is East, West is West, and never the twain shall meet. That's what Rudyard Kipling would say until all number of Indians started to come to America. But anyways, so the genesis of the talk came from, having been at a lab, then at a vendor, and now back at a lab. There's interesting perspectives that different users of FIPS validated crypto modules or different people involved in the validation process have in terms of what is FIPS and how it is useful in the security arena. Over the years, I've been doing FIPS since 2003, and over the years, what has ended up happening is that technology has progressed, but FIPS standard has not as much, and as a result, you're seeing that divergence, at least I have been seeing that divergence between what happens during a certification or validation process and what happens in the real world. So in the talk, I'm going to touch upon just a very brief background on FIPS, where it comes from, look at some of the problems that I am seeing in the FIPS world, take four examples which have resonated with me and in a sense typifies the problem that we are facing in the divergence between certification validation program of as governed by FIPS standard and the real world, and then come throw out some ideas on how we can bring them together. So just a brief history. The first version of FIPS 1.1 was signed in January 1994. Then that went on for 7 years. In May 2001, FIPS 1.2 was signed. If you look at the FIPS standard, 1.1 more so, but 1.2 as well was attuned to hardware crypto modules, and that made sense in that time. When FIPS 1.2 was signed, I think so there were maybe four FIPS approved cryptographic algorithms, and SHA-1, HMAC, SHA-1, DES, and maybe triple DES. I'm not even sure whether AES was there at that time. And usually, processing power was not that high, so crypto implementations were in hardware, and it made complete sense for the standard to concentrate on hardware crypto modules. Funny enough, the first product to get a FIPS 1.2 certificate was a software cryptographic library, F-Secure software cryptographic library. So as you work with the FIPS standard more, and if you're a software application vendor or software vendor, you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. FIPS IGs have tried to make that square peg rounder, but it is still limited by the standard itself. There's a requirement that the standard needs to be updated every 5 years. So in September 2005 was the first draft of FIPS 1.3. Think about it, September 2005. We are right now in November 2015, and we are still hoping to get the next version of FIPS. So we have been beholden to a 14-year-old standard And technology has progressed significantly since then. It's just amazing how much technology. There were no iPhones in 2001. If you had a, I forget who had it. I think the Stefan in his talk had it. If you had a cool Nokia phone, it was cool in 2001. So 15 years. There's hope that 1.4-3 will be signed next year. Early next year is the hope. I hope it does get signed early next year, because if it does not, change in government happens, and then you have lost another 2 years, because the Secretary of Commerce has to sign off on the standard. So this is a brief history on the standard itself. Now, just going over some numbers, these are, there are a lot of good numbers for FIPS. So what I've concentrated on since the talk is about some of the problems I'm seeing in FIPS. I thought about putting in the good numbers, but I said that might take away from the talk. But very quickly, one of the beauties of FIPS is that, as far as I can tell, it's the only cryptographic standard in the world, a validation program that is open run. So, you have third-party commercial laboratories, you have a validation program, you have vendors going through certification. There's JCMVP and the Korea CMVP, but those are, again, derivatives of the CMVP program here in the US and Canada. Most other countries, crypto validation is very governed by the government. Usually national security agencies are involved in most countries, and it's a closed-off process. So the beauty of FIPS is an open commercial process, and that's a unique thing. So that's great. We have 2,300-plus FIPS validations. That's, FIPS 1.4-1, 1.4-2. That's a quite a number. That shows how essential the standard is to the industry and to the government. And then there are about, I'd pull numbers from CMVP's website, I think, so there are about 300-plus vendors, unique vendors, who have gone through who have taken their products through the FIPS validation program. So those are the good numbers. Now I want to concentrate on the numbers that I came up with. So the standard, okay, pages in the standard. So the standard starts off with 69 pages. A number of customers have come up to me and said, oh, I've read the FIPS standard. It does not seem to be that complicated. I know I can do it. I've implemented everything. And I go, oh, boy, because that's just the tip of the iceberg. The DTR, the derived test requirements, which talks about how to test against each standard, is 127 pages. Makes sense. At an old company that I used to work for, we like to call it the long cookbook. The standard talks about what you're making, and the derived test requirements talks about how to make it. Now then, there you have the implementation guidance. The intention of the implementation guidance was supposed to be a frequently asked questions. It never was supposed to change the requirements of the standard. However, over the years, given that the standard itself did not change, really the only tool that was available to the CMVP to interpret requirements was the implementation guidance. And that has been used as a way to, basically add new wheels to an old car. And we have 63 pages of implementation guidance, almost rivaling the standard itself. That's never good for a standard. Anytime you have frequently asked questions that are so many, they need to get pulled back into the standard itself. Number of requirements. There are about 287 requirements across all types of products. So, if you've done FIPS validation, you can have hardware, software, hybrid model products, embedded, standalone, et cetera. There are 287 requirements. But over 50% of them are documentation requirements. Anyone who has been in the security industry long enough, documentation does not equal to security. It just means that you're paying someone or you're hiring someone to write a lot of documentation for you. That does not lead to security. Additionally, over 50% of the requirements, and this is my opinion, orthogonal to crypto. Section 3 deals with roles, services, and authentication. Yes, it is important for security, but is it important for crypto? Section 5 deals with physical security. These are COTS products. How does opacity and temperateness label help? And I get into that as in one of the examples. Section 9, self-test. If you look at the self-test requirements, if any of those tests fail, you have bigger issues in the product. So known answer tests do not fail on their own. So where are we adding to the overall cryptographic posture or cryptographic security posture of the product? The word key, everyone would agree, you know, in a security cryptographic security standard, the word key or keys is really important. That word appears 349 times out of 25,000 words in the standard and 551 times out of 47,000 words in the standard. It is my belief that cryptographic standards should have a lot more requirements on key management and key lifecycle than what those frequency belies. Next two are on OpenSSL. So OpenSSL is probably the most widely used cryptographic library in the world. I would hypothesize that about 95% of networking devices out there have OpenSSL in some form or the other. It's widely used in software applications, etc. Recently, OpenSSL has not had a very good run as far as vulnerabilities is concerned. In 2013, there were 5 vulnerabilities on it. I pulled this from CVE database, 2014-22 and 2015-26, and some of them have been pretty spectacular vulnerabilities. So, you know, you would think, okay, you know, OpenSSL has gone through so many changes. OpenSSL has a FIPS validation. That would have had to be changed as well. Well, the OpenSSL FIPS object module has been changed 0 times since 2013. So why is that happening? I'll get that in one of the examples. So these are just some of the numbers that I pulled. There are a lot of good to take away from the standard itself, but these are some stark numbers here. So the problem that I believe for FIPS is the perception of FIPS. It's like the blind man and the elephant description. Everyone thinks it's something else. What the CMVP thinks, and CMVP I include not just the authority, the government authority at NIST and CSE, but also the labs are part of the CMVP. We think it's a security standard. It provides security to the end customer. Product vendors, I've been a product vendor. Frankly, it's a means to an end. As much as we would love to believe that, certification is great and we would do it irrespective of whether it would be a procurement requirement or not, but in the end, business trumps that. So if there is a business need, certification happens. If today, you know, the U.S. government would say, you know, FIPS is no longer required, let's see how many vendors go through FIPS certification. So it's means to an end. For federal agencies, in my experience, it's a checkbox. It's one of those things, it's a problem until you do not have it. Once you have it, it becomes a checkbox. Think of it from a federal procuring officer. He has a 100-page checklist that he has to go through before he procures a product, one of which is FIPS certification. So unfortunately, it has become a checkbox. What it actually is, in my mind, it's a bit of everything and a bit of nothing. So all of those are valid perception of FIPS, but again, depending on what the product is and how we have validated it and how we have integrated it into a larger product, it could mean none of that. It's a conformance standard. Ryan in his previous talks put it really well. You are just ensuring that the product meets the requirements that it claims. So if you're not claimed a requirement, let's say you've not claimed key management, then that is outside of the scope of the standard, of the validation program. At levels 1 and 2, it provides little more assurance than the product implements crypto algorithms as per specification. I truly believe, especially at level 1, algorithm testing provides the most value of taking a product through FIPS validation. Beyond that, it provides little more assurance. Also, it does not mean that the overall cryptographic posture of the system is secure, and I'll give you an example why. So how did we get here? It was with best of intentions. As I mentioned, when the FIPS standard was created, 2001, FIPS 1.5-2, the crypto world was very different, and those requirements made complete sense at that point of time. But now it's an anachronism. It unfortunately has not been able to change with time, and a lot of it has to deal with how the standard is structured and how the essence of the standard cannot be changed. And it's not easy to update the standard. We have been trying it for 14 years now. If and the CMVP has tried to do a good job about it, especially in recent times. They've tried to keep the standard updated. Two examples that come to mind is the relaxation of requirements on CRNG tests, continuous random number generator tests, which is a very pragmatic step forward. The other example that comes to mind is the requirement for integrity check at PowerUp. There was a discussion during the lab managers meeting, and there's a draft IG that will come out soon. But there was a does a PowerUp integrity check make sense? Is there a way to reduce the burden on the product by sampling of how many blocks of the firmware need to be checked? So there, we have tried to keep the standard updated. However, again, we are bound by the standard itself. So it's an anachronism. That to me is the biggest issue with 140-2 as it stands now. So I told you I'll give you four examples. This is my soapbox, physical security for level one and level two. It's a COTS product. Anyone can buy the product, open it up, and analyze it as much as they want. Most products that are validated at level two sit in a data center, are not in a high threat environment. Opacity makes no sense for that kind of product. Well, you could downgrade to level one, but my competitor has a level two, I need to go for level two. So where does opacity add value? In my belief, I think so in a crypto standard, opacity as well as tamper evidence at levels one and two make no sense. I think so level three and four requirements are great, and you can see that in terms of the type of products that are validated at level three, very few at level four, at level three. It's usually smart cards, HSMs, that typically reside in a high threat environment. A smart card, by definition, could be in an adversary's hand. So you want that higher tamper response circuitry, et cetera. But at levels one and two, opacity and tamper evidence does not help. Most of the times, especially networking products, are not opaque. They need ventilation. So what the vendors end up doing is to meet the requirements, they design opacity shields and sell it as FIPS kits. You can go and ask most networking vendors, those FIPS kits do not get procured because usually they increase the size of the networking device and now it does not go into your networking rack. So they do never get procured. It's more a means to achieve level two than actually being deployed that way. See the access points at NIST. NIST is supposed to meet FIPS 140-2 requirements. None of them have tamper evidence labels attached to them. Key management. So there's, over the years, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, there's been a tendency to shrink your cryptographic boundary. From what used to be previously entire products being FIPS validated, now the cryptographic boundary has shrunk down to just the core crypto itself. Makes complete sense. FIPS is a long process, is an expensive process, and it is tied to a specific version that was validated. So you want to try and validate something that does not change often, but still get you that checkbox, okay, my product is FIPS validation, FIPS validated. So what do? You shrink down the cryptographic boundary. But what ends up happening in that is that you leave out lot of the aspects of a crypto system that are key to the security of the crypto system, primary being key management. In most cases, when software cryptographic libraries get FIPS violated, key management is not included. Keys get stored somewhere. They are not under the control of the crypto model that was FIPS violated. There are no claims that can be made around key management. However, you put that FIPS violated crypto module into a larger product, you can claim FIPS compliance. So an end customer asked, hey, is your product FIPS validated? No, but we use FIPS validated crypto module. Okay, good enough, checkbox. So there's a false sense of security that is arising out of getting a FIPS validated crypto module. Passwords. So passwords are great. However, in a cryptographic standard, I'm not sure how it helps. It becomes, you touch upon it, but you do not dive deep enough into it to make it worthwhile. So I consider, as the password requirements in FIPS 140-2 stand right now are pretty rudimentary. The complexity requirements, you could run a cracking tool on the password that is configured to meet the FIPS requirements. You could probably crack it in in an hour at the most. The requirements of complexity are 1 in 1 million and 1 in 100,000 for tries in 60 minutes. So it's a pretty simple requirement which does not really add to the security of the product. There's no requirement for PKI. So you can use certificates, but there's no requirement that the certificates are tied to a root of trust. You can have just self-signed certificates, and it would still meet the FIPS requirements. It gives a false sense of security. Then finally, OpenSSL. I touched upon OpenSSL briefly doing the numbers. It's the most widely used cryptographic library in the world. It's prevalent in most products. Extremely common to claim FIPS compliance using the OpenSSL. So OpenSSL, the Open Source Foundation took OpenSSL through a FIPS validation, but all they included was the crypto algorithms in them. None of the TLS functionalities included within the cryptographic boundary of OpenSSL. Key management is completely out of scope. There's no claims on long-term stored keys that use OpenSSL. So security assurance provided by OpenSSL's FIPS validation is little more than ensuring that the cryptographic algorithms are implemented as per specification. There's nothing beyond that you get out of it. However, hundreds and thousands of products have OpenSSL in them and claim FIPS compliance, which rightly so. There's nothing wrong in claiming that, but you're not getting what you think you're getting when you think that you have a FIPS validated crypto module in your product. Few other examples of requirements I think do not make sense in a cryptographic standard: FCC requirements. I think so. It was Steve Ratcliffe from Cisco who got on his soapbox on FCC requirements. Why do EMI EMC requirements? What place do they have in a crypto standard? I've never been able to answer that for my customers. Finance state models, great idea. The idea is that you design a finance state module. A finite state machine, and then you design your product, you create your product as per the finite state machine. However, in reality, what ends up happening is that your product is already designed, and then you create a finite state machine. So, you know, it's kind of putting the horse behind the cart. Configuration management requirements, yes, they are helpful, but in terms of, you know, determining how versioning is done. But again, I do not believe you need a dedicated section in the standard itself. The other one that I always find interesting is software firmware load test. It's a good test to have. When you're loading a new firmware, you should check the authenticity of the firmware. But really the way the test is currently designed, it only checks whether the firmware is valid, not authentic. So because it's not tied to a root of trust. So you can have a signed firmware using a self-signed certificate, there's no checking of a root of trust. Ideally, for hardware products, the requirement should be a hardware root of trust should be there. If you look at recent attacks, a lot of them have come from this basic issue. Firmwares can be updated pretty easily without any check for authenticity. So those are the items that I felt are problematic with the standard as it stands now. So how do we get better at this? As I mentioned, the biggest issue is that the standard is the standard is the standard. You cannot change it. I think so we need to get away from that. I think so the standard should provide the intention and the essence of the requirement, and the program should be given the flexibility to interpret the requirements based on technology. It is okay to change. It is okay to interpret requirements as long as it is done fairly and across the board and in a transparent manner. I particularly like the common criteria example, where the common criteria standard is considered as a toolkit of requirements that you can pick and choose and pull for requirements that make sense for that particular technology. I would love to see the FIPS standard move in a similar direction, where the FIPS standard provides a tool set of requirements and a sense of requirements that makes sense for a crypto system, but then there's an interpretation of requirements based on technology. Something requirement that might make sense for a software cryptographic library might not make sense for a smart card, might not make sense for a networking device, to have that interpretation. The other bogeyman is specific versions that are FIPS validated. Subsidization takes 12 to 18 months from start to finish. Product cycles have over the period have reduced significantly. New products, especially in the software mobile apps arena, there are new updates pushed every month. You cannot just have a rate of change of technology so fast and you tie the validation to a particular version. There has to be a way where a vendor can validate a product and maintain its validation as they make minor bug fixes, minor changes. It's just a pragmatic way to do it. Yes, there'll always be a time where that one corner case where a vendor changed something which affected the crypto module and in a sense potentially destroy the security of the module, but I would rather live with that corner case rather than tying all vendors to a specific version that was first validated. That's another reason why vendors are shrinking down their crypto boundary. They do not want to take their products through certification every year when they come out with major releases. Encourage and reward vendors to draw larger cryptographic boundaries. Right now, it's almost a penalty for product vendors to draw large cryptographic boundaries. You shrink it down, you keep that boundary constant, and you can sell to federal customers. Encourage them. Encourage that if you take your entire products through FIPS validation, there'll be benefits of it. As I was writing this, I was trying to think how can you encourage and reward vendors. I could not think of an example, but I'm hoping that as a collective we can make the requirements better. Bring in the industry. I think so. It's great. The CMUF is being brought in. The industry is being brought in. CMVP has been extremely open to work with the industry in recent past. I think so. That's a great idea. We have seen the benefits of it in the common criteria world. In the end, it's the industry who has to live with the standard, and bringing in the industry will make the standard better. Concentrate on requirements that make sense. Cryptographic module specification. Yes, you want to define what a cryptographic module is, what a crypto boundary is. Make it better. Require a FIPS mode of operation as a permanent mode of operation so that an end customer does not have to go and do 20 different configuration tests before they can put their product into FIPS mode of operation. Make it a requirement that there's a simple way to enable FIPS mode. Physical security at levels 3 and 4 make complete sense. Make them better. There are huge side channel attacks that are problematic. Bring that into the standard. And ISO 19701, potentially 140-3 version, brings that in. That's a good thing. Concentrate on cryptographic key management. Concentrate on the key lifecycle. Do not mandate that your keys are tracked. Right now, key zeroization, it just says, wherever your keys are stored, they are zeroized. In most cases, products zeroize keys that are stored in long-term memory. But there are multiple copies of keys that are maintained. When you have SSDs, your keys could reside on a block that was put into an unusable block. So now you have remnants of keys that you do not even know that exist on your SSDs. Look at modern attacks on key infrastructure, key management infrastructure. Bring those requirements into the standard. Focus on lifecycle. Make those requirements all encompassing. So, as I mentioned, key lifecycle. Implementing cryptographic algorithms is the easy part. Phil Zimmerman, I loved the quote he made that as security practitioners look at crypto as a mathematical problem, nation states have looked at it as an engineering problem. So you might have the best cryptographic algorithms, and those are easy to implement. But that's not where the attacks are coming from. The attacks are coming from where your keys are stored, how they are generated, how they are used. Concentrate on those requirements. That's it. So we have maybe about 15 minutes of Q&A questions. I'll get Ed. Be easy. So I think making optional just blanket optional, I think, is a problem because your product might be in a high threat environment, but just to get the FIPS validation, you make it optional. However, tying it to your threat environment is something that I would recommend. So for a wireless access point sitting on top of a pole, that should have some sort of higher security, physical security requirement than a network device that is going to sit in the bowels of the Pentagon.
Other standards like, say, for instance, the PCI DSS, they have compensating controls.
Yep.
So one like physical security as an example, if it's not a data center with, like you said, armed guards, hungry dogs, and a moat with, you know, alligator, you could, you know, put that as a compensating control.
Absolutely.
Tamper evident labels or something like that.
Absolutely.
So, like,
Exactly. Randy.
I have one or two questions. As far as the physical security, the standard supports that. You keep level section 5, level 1, and not implement the physical security.
The problem there is that as soon as you implement, as soon as you put that at level 1, you might meet all other sections at level 2. Your overall level is still level 1. If that was that easy, we would have definitely that we would not have had this problem. I agree. Educate the consumer, but time and again it has been shown. And again, you know, think of it from the consumer's perspective. FIPS is just one set of requirements that they have to meet before procuring a product. They have 100 other requirements that they have to meet. So it becomes difficult to put the onus on the customer to be able to make that differentiation.
I was a little concerned with your comment that recently the CBP is relaxing some requirements that are in the standard, the continuous RNG test.
They are not necessarily relaxing, but making it more pragmatic for modern day.
How do they do that without informing the Secretary of Department of Commerce that they're changing the requirements of the standard without changing the standard?
I think so. That ship has sailed. There was no hybrid module. There was no hybrid definition in the standard. And similarly, in my understanding, it does build on that. The interpretation of CRNG test does build on the essence of the requirement as opposed to the letter of the requirement. To check for.
Yep. And so that's always been the case. And basically, the feedback is been pointing out that if you want to implement something like a repetitive count test and make that part of your determination on whether to go into your recoverable error state and go back or to go into a hard error state and die, that's always been allowed in the standard. So it's not that CBP has been.
Well, in 800-90B, you do not need a CRNG test if you're 800-90B DRBG. Yes.
Just like, for example, you know, in iOS, you have key hierarchy with a hardware root of trust, but things are really protected by
So if you allow for encryption, but there's always, there would always be one root key which will have to be protected. But the way I look at it is that physical security is more deals with threat environment. So I would rather like to see physical security with the threat environment. So in what environment is your product going to be deployed? If as Ryan and Ed mentioned, right? So if you have compensating controls where you say, okay, this product is going to be in a data center where you're not going to get the level of threat as it would be as if it was sitting on top of a pole, there should be different ways of looking at that. It should, every product should not be treated the same way just because they want to meet level two requirements for physical security. Alex.
Are you thinking something along the lines of common criteria of fall remediation for some flexibility in version number and evaluation certification?
That's one option. I think so. Another option is also being pragmatic and saying that, you know, vendors are going to have to make updates to their product. It's reality of modern day products. There are flaws that come out, there are vulnerabilities that come out, bug fixes that happen. And an end customer should not have to choose between they want to implement the latest and greatest version, which probably is more secure, or the FIPS validated version. I think so there has to be a path where FIPS validation is valid for, let's say, on a time-based period. Common criteria has done, NIAP has done that. Yes, it's not perfect. However, it is more pragmatic, I believe. Yes.
I think one of the big deficiencies is that Open Forest doesn't require specific testing by the vendor themselves. So we had situations where vendors came up and said, here it is, and after a short time of testing, we found out they didn't test anything themselves. And in this case, I also cannot trust them that after some bug fixing, they would verify that whether it had any side effect or anything like this. So I would like to have really the requirement for full testing of all the requirements, also on the vendor side, and in an automated way, that in case of some flaw remediation, they just say, oh, we ran the full set of tests, we confirmed everything turned out as last time, as expected.
I think so. It's a great area, but you can only get to that if you can automate all the tests in the FIPS standard. Yeah. But that's an interesting. But when you mentioned that, it struck me, an idea struck me that, you know, right now a vendor can take a FIPS validated crypto module, put it into their product, and claim FIPS compliance. I think so. There needs to be a higher bar to claim FIPS compliance. I think so. If you do that, yes, it's perfectly acceptable to do that, but then there needs to be hired by some sort of checking that, okay, when you do that, what are the requirements that you already, that you meet and the ones that you do not meet? I think so. There should not be a blanket allowance of integrating crypto models into larger systems and then claiming those larger systems as FIPS compliant. Yes, Mike. Well, and that's a gray area there. So if you look at CNSSP 11 policy that guides national procurement for national security systems, require both FIPS and common criteria. However, to pass common criteria, you do not need FIPS certificate. Ideally, now I would like to get to the point where FIPS is a requirement. However, there's a difference in how in timelines that NAV would like to see for certification and how long FIPS take. So they have done an interim solution of allowing just cryptographic algorithms to be validated. So it's the rule of the law is that you need both FIPS and quant criteria. However, given the time difference, you can get by with just algorithm testing. Yes. I'm not sure whether it's CMVP, but NIST could put out special publications that deal with this. Yep. Tammy.
Let me start by saying I'm not asking for more restrictions and checkboxes.
I wonder why. But there's no requirement. There's no requirement for hardware root of trust. Yep, there isn't. So, if you had a TPM that was your hardware root of trust, and that's where your key resides, public certificate resides to validate the hardware, validate the software that is being loaded. It would be treated the same way if there was another vendor who had just a self-signed certificate. There's no difference that would. So TPMs can be FIPS validated. There's no restriction on TPMs being FIPS validated, but I believe there isn't a requirement for it. That's why you're not seeing FIPS validated TPMs.
Right.
Yep.
And there's nothing that checks it from the TPM going up.
Yep.
Because if there was a TPM going up, then we would start finding this problem.
Yep. Yep. All righty.
Any last
I would counter, how do you stop that from happening now? We have products that are validated 5-6 years back, and that's the only validation they have. They are still being sold. I would be very surprised if those products are being run based on the firmware that was validated. So I understand that you are giving a blank check, but what I'm saying is no different than now. Instead, say that you can make updates, but you have to certify a product every 2 years. That way, at least you catch a product cycle. 2-3 years, you can make a determination. That way, you're not having products that were validated 5-6 years back and then just sit on that certification and being just sold because there was a version that was validated.
Okay. So thank you all. breaks in the exhibit area. And again, I think this brought out the point, too, that we ask you in coming years, and actually when we meet in May, let's encourage more of the real users of this to come to the conference potentially in May in Ottawa. So thank you very much. Breaks in exhibit area.